from 1 Kings chapter 18, verses 1 to 19. After many days, the word of the Lord came to Elijah in the third year, saying, "Go, show yourself to Ahab, and I will send rain upon the earth." So Elijah went to show himself to Ahab. Now the famine was severe in Samaria, and Ahab called Obadiah, who was over the household. Now Obadiah feared the Lord greatly, and when Jezebel cut off the prophets of the Lord, Obadiah took 100 prophets and hid them by 50s in a cave and fed them with bread and water. And Ahab said to Obadiah, "Go through the land to all the springs of water and to all the valleys. Perhaps we might find grass and save the horses and mules alive and not lose some of the animals." So they divided the land between them to pass through it. Ahab went in one direction by himself, and Obadiah went in another direction by himself. And as Obadiah was on the way, behold, Elijah met him. And Obadiah recognized him and fell on his face and said, "Is it you, my lord Elijah?" And he answered him, "It is I. Go, tell your lord, behold, Elijah is here." And he said, "How have I sinned that you would give your servant into the hand of Ahab to kill me? As the Lord your God lives, there is no nation or kingdom where my Lord has not sent to seek you." And when they would say, "He is not here," he would take an oath of the kingdom or nation that they had not found you. And now you say, "Go and tell your Lord, behold, Elijah is here. And as soon as I have gone from you, the Spirit of the Lord will carry you I know not where. And so when I come and tell Ahab and he cannot find you, he will kill me, although I, your servant, have feared the Lord from my youth. Has it not been told, my Lord, when I did what I did when Jezebel killed the prophets of the Lord, how I hid 100 men of the Lord's prophets by 50s in a cave and fed them with bread and water? And now you say, 'Go, tell your Lord, behold, Elijah is here, and he will kill me.'" And Elijah said, "As the Lord of hosts lives, before whom I stand, I will surely show myself to him today." So Obadiah went to meet Ahab and told him, and Ahab went to meet Elijah. When Ahab saw Elijah, Ahab said to him, "Is it you, you troubler of Israel?" And he answered, "I have not troubled Israel, but you have, and your father's house, because you have abandoned the commandments of the Lord and followed the Baals. Now therefore send and gather all Israel to me at Mount Carmel, and the 450 prophets of Baal, and the 400 prophets of Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table."
Well, let me add my welcome to Hittons. Great to see regulars back from holidays and some others joining us for the first time today. So welcome to Grace Church. And we're continuing our series in the book of 1 Kings. And I'm going to continue the reading from where Philip left off. So we're on page 300, and we're at 1 Kings 18, verse 20. And this is where the story gets quite exciting. "So Ahab sent to all the people of Israel and gathered the prophets together at Mount Carmel. And Elijah came near to all the people and said, 'How long will you go limping between two different opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal, then follow him.' And the people did not answer him a word. Then Elijah said to the people, 'I, even I only, am left a prophet of the Lord, but Baal's prophets are 450 men. Let two bulls be given to us, and let them choose one bull for themselves and cut it in pieces and lay it on the wood, but put no fire to it. And I'll prepare the other bull and lay it on the wood and put no fire to it. And you call on the name of your God, and I'll call upon the name of the Lord. And the God who answers by fire, he's God.' And the people answered, 'Good idea.' Elijah said to the prophets of Baal, choose for yourself one bull and prepare it first, for there's so many of you, and call upon the name of your God, but put no fire to it. And they took the bull that was given to them and prepared it and called upon the name of Baal from morning until noon, saying, O Baal, answer us. But there was no voice, and no one answered. And they limped around the altar that they'd made. And at noon, Elijah mocked them, saying, cry aloud, for he is a god. I mean, either he's musing, or he's relieving himself, or he's on a journey, or perhaps he's asleep and must be awakened. And they cried aloud and cut themselves after their custom with swords and lances until the blood gushed out upon them. And as midday passed, they raved on until the time of the oblation. But there was no voice. No one answered. No one paid attention. Then Elijah said to all the people, come near to me. And all the people came near to him. And he repaired the altar of the Lord that had been thrown down. Elijah took 12 stones according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Jacob, to whom the word of the Lord came, saying, Israel shall be your name. And with the stones he built an altar in the name of the Lord. And he made the trench about the altar as great as would contain 2 seahs of seed. And he put the wood in order and cut the bull in pieces and laid it on the wood. And he said, fill 4 jars with water and pour it on the burnt offering and on the wood. And he said, do it a second time. And they did it a second time. And he said, do it a third time. And they did it a third time. And the water ran round the altar and filled the trench also with water. And at the time of the offering of the oblation, Elijah the prophet came near and said, O Lord, God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known this day that you are God in Israel, and that I'm your servant, and that I've done all these things at your word. Answer me, O Lord, answer me, that this people may know that you, O Lord, are God, and that you have turned their hearts back. Then the fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt offering and the wood and the stones and the dust and licked up the water that was in the trench. And when all the people saw it, they fell on their faces and said, the Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God. And Elijah said to them, seize the prophets of Baal, let not one of them escape. And they seized them. And Elijah brought them down to the brook Kishon and slaughtered them there. And Elijah said to Ahab, go up, eat and drink, for there's a sound of the rushing of rain. So Ahab went up to eat and to drink, and Elijah went up to the top of Mount Carmel, and he bowed himself down on the earth and put his face between his knees. And he said to his servant, go up now, look towards the sea. And he went up and looked and said, there's nothing. He said, go again 7 times. At the 7th time he said, behold, a little cloud like a man's hand is rising from the sea. And he said, go up, say to Ahab, prepare your chariot and go down, lest the rain stop you. And in a little while the heavens grew black with clouds and wind, and there was a great rain. And Ahab rode and went to Jezreel, and the hand of the Lord was on Elijah, and he gathered up his garment and ran before Ahab to the entrance of Jezreel. There it's a fantastic story, and I've been looking forward to this pretty much all summer, ever since we said we were going to do 1 Kings. I was very pleased that I could get in 1 Kings 18 before Andrew Latimer gets back and steals some of the passages. It's a fantastic contest. It's a great showdown. The true God is the God who answers by fire. Let's see which of us is the real thing. Now, I've had quite a lot of fun preparing this in various contexts, and I see Nathan is at the back, and he'll remember this. So I was speaking on this passage, actually, at the Goldsmith University Christian Union weekend away. And you might know we have students from several different universities in this area of London, but Goldsmiths is the most, is it fair to say, the most out there? So we're going to do a promo video for the weekend, and I said, well, maybe I can just speak to camera and say, come on the weekend, we'll be looking at 1 Kings 18. And Nathan said that just won't cut it at Goldsmiths. It's got to be much more cutting edge than that. So instead, we filmed a kind of mockumentary, like a spoof documentary in B&Q, as if Nathan and I were the people sent by Elijah to buy all the equipment that we required. And we walked into B&Q, and I kid you not, as we walked in, there were just 2 barbecues side by side with a big space around. I thought, this is the, I mean, I wish we could have taken Grace Church Greenwich to B&Q
in order to perform the ritual there. And we got 12 stones, etc., etc., etc. And the people in Binky, at first they thought we were actually trying to buy barbecues. And then they were just a bit bemused when we started saying things like, no, no, we don't need any ignition because we've got alternative plans for that, haven't we, Nathan? Heavenly ignition. They're like, what? But anyway, there we are. Fortunately, we weren't arrested or anything like that. But it's a great and a vivid story. It is a story of a contest between two deities. And actually, there's two rounds to the contest. There's what we called last week the rain competition, and what we're calling this week the barbecue competition. The rain competition, remember, it was hugely ironic because Baal, this god that had become popular, that lots of them were following, Baal was a storm god. He was supposed to be a god of wind and rain. And so Elijah said, chapter 17, verse 1, last week's story, he said, well, in the name of the Lord, I tell you, it's not going to rain. So over to you, Baal. Let's see whether the rain god can make it rain. And he can't, and we're 3.5 years now into a terrible drought, and he's doing quite badly. So it's quite ironic that a storm god is challenged to a rain contest. But then in this chapter, God challenges him to a barbecue lighting contest. And I put there, only Yahweh can light the fire. Yahweh is the Hebrew name for God, which in our Bibles gets written as Lord in capitals. But there's basically two different rival contestants. Which one is the true God? Is Yahweh or L-O-R-D? Is he God or is Baal God? At the end of round one, it's Baal nil, Yahweh one. Let's just look at the play a bit more slowly. The first half is Baal's half. He wins the toss. In fact, he doesn't win the toss, but Elijah's just generous. He says, well, since there's so many of you, 450 of you, plus the other 400, why don't you go first? So they prepare their bull on their altar, and they call out to Baal from morning until noon, but no one answers. So not to be discouraged, they decide to try and invoke religious power in various kind of pagan religious ways. So they try dancing, although it's not very impressive dancing, it's kind of limping around, a bit like me on a dance floor. And at noon, it's getting a bit ridiculous because they've had hours to pray and there's still not a single spark. So at this point, Elijah starts being a bit cheeky. Cry a bit louder, he says, because after all, Baal is a god. So I mean, stands to reason he ought to be able to hear you. Let's think about some of the reasons why he hasn't lit this fire yet. Maybe he's musing. Maybe he's deep in thought and haven't quite got his attention. Or maybe he's on the loo and a bit caught short. That would be a fine thing for a god, wouldn't it? Or maybe he's fallen asleep and you've got to wake him out. And instead of sort of noticing that Elijah's mocking him, they seem sort of oblivious to the irony and they take him at his word. Okay, maybe he's on the loo. We'll cry louder. So they raise the volume of their voices and then it becomes less comedy and slightly more grotesque as they begin to slash themselves until the blood flows. This isn't fairy stories. Go to the British Museum and you'll see a whole array of different gods or divinities that demanded human blood in order to persuade them to act. And they try that. They cut themselves with lances and as the midday passed, they raved on. But it comes to evening, there was no voice, no one answered, no one paid any attention. It's just pathetic. Baal nil. Second half, shorter half actually, Elijah goes to a bit of trouble rebuilding the goal, and he builds it with 12 stones. We'll come to that a bit later. And it's then as if Elijah sort of mocks them, but the other way around. So he mocked them that Baal couldn't answer, and now he mocks them for this contest is patronizingly easy. I mean, it hasn't rained for 3.5 years, so the wood's going to be pretty dry, and Yahweh's going to find it a bit of a, it's a bit demeaning of him to light a fire as easily as that. Let's make it a bit harder. So they get some water, and they slosh it with water, and he says, that's not quite enough water. So they slosh it with more water, a bit more water. They slosh it the third time with water, and now there's water just dripping of everything, And Elijah says, yeah, that should be a fair contest. O Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known this day that you are God in Israel, and that I am your servant, and that I've done all these things at your word. Answer me, O Lord, answer me, that this people may know that you, O Lord, are God, and that you have turned their hearts back. I timed it, and that prayer took me 15 seconds when I practiced earlier. Baal has had the entire day, and Elijah just says to God, please, would you light this fire? And then suddenly the fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt offering and the wood and the stones and the dust and the water. It's like, you know, it's too easy just to raise the barbecue. God is going to melt everything to do with it. And the stones are plasmalized and the water is vaporized as fire comes from heaven. And you might say at the end of that, at the end of the second half, it's a fairly clear win. 1-0. Great contest. Fun to watch. That's the barbecue competition, and then it's followed by the sort of end of the rain competition. See if you can answer this question. Why does God have to wait until he lights the barbecue before he can send the rain? It's obviously not because God can't light fires when it's wet, because he says he's quite good at that. Why does he have to wait until the lighting of the barbecue before he can send the rain? He's got to show that it wasn't Baal that did it. Because Baal, after all, is the storm god, the rain god. And they might think, oh, well, it's taken 3.5 years, but finally Baal's come good. Hooray, well done, Baal. And so Baal wins the rain contest and God wins the fire contest. So God waits until Baal is utterly defeated. There's no question that he's a fake. And then God says, well, now you know that the god of the storm god isn't actually a god at all. It's time to bring a storm. And this huge torrent of water comes. Elijah's got quite a lot of faith because it's a clear sky, and he tells his servant, go and check the sky again. Still a clear sky. Check it again. Still a clear sky. You know, it's the seventh time. There's a hand-sized bit of cloud, a bit like, you know, a couple of weeks ago in the heat wave. And then Elijah says, on the basis of a little hand of vapor, run! Because the rainstorm is going to be so huge that you won't be able to complete your journey if you wait. And then they sprint off. And then, sure enough, the clouds go black. And then God wins the rain competition as well. Baal, Nil, Yahweh, 2. So on the surface, it's a contest between two gods. And one of them turns out to be a fake. I was teaching on this in another youth context. Not the Goldsmith weekend, but a youth convention, and I tried to write a rap, and I'm not very good at rapping, and I hesitate to do it, but I know that Hitton, he's leading the service, absolutely loves rap, so almost in Hitton's honour, and then for the rest of your amusement, but it is going to keep going over the next week, so if you think it was absolutely abysmal, dissuade me, please, after today, otherwise there'll be another verse every week. But it goes like this. We need a bit of rhythm, and you have to go sort of stamp. When the people had an evil king, they worshipped Baal, a terrible thing. God said he's a fake, but if you're in doubt, let's see which of us can end the drought. Or if you prefer, light a barbecue. Or maybe Baal is sleeping or has gone to the loo. When the people see the fire, they exclaim, the Lord, he is God, and it starts to rain. There we are, that's it. Thank you. Easy contest. God wins, Yahweh 2, Baal 0. And then I thought about it for a moment, and I was sort of puzzling over the chapter in preparation for teaching it, and I thought, that can't actually be what's going on. It can't actually be a contest between God and Baal, for the simple reason that Baal doesn't actually exist. So it's a bit like saying, you know, should we play tennis, you know, and then I'm going to play tennis against, and when I was young, I had an imaginary friend called Conker. Apparently, it's very normal for well-adjusted children. Imagine I say, I'm going to go and play tennis against Conker. And I serve, and he doesn't return serve. And then it's the next set, and it's his turn to serve, and the ball never crosses the net. It wouldn't be that fun a game. I mean, even if you've got a childish imagination. This is a contest with only one player. And it's a lot of trouble to go to play a game against someone non-existent. So what's the contest actually for? And I want to suggest you'll see down a bit lower on the, there's a handout, might help you as it gets more complicated. Actually, I think this is not a contest between Yahweh and Baal. It's actually a contest between Yahweh, God, and the people's doubts. That's what the contest is for. That's the prize that's being played for. And I want to show you that in three different ways. So let's look at the before and the after and then the medium. So look at the before. Before this contest, there really is a lot of doubt in the country. There's actually two groups. There's Obadiah and his 100 prophets. They're the sort of faithful remnant. They're the people who've stayed true to God, the true God, even while the king and his wife and the rest of the country have gone after Baal worship. But they are persecuted. Verse 4, when Jezebel cut off the prophets of the Lord, so she slaughtered them. And Obadiah feared the Lord, and he took 100 prophets and hid them by 50s in a cave and fed them with bread and water. This is a kind of Corrie ten Boom story, if you know the famous Christian book. He hides the prophets in two caves, sneaks food in at a time of massive persecution. So that's one group. There are faithful Christians, but they're hiding and they're scared. And even Obadiah, he's not a coward. I mean, he's taken a huge risk to hide these prophets. But even he's pretty scared when Elijah goes, Obadiah, could you just go and tell Ahab that I want to meet him? Are you kidding? Like, seriously? You do realize, don't you, that he's gone to every single area of the whole country and people have to give a signed document to say that you're not there. That's how extensive the search is. And you want me to go and say, public enemy number one, he's just on his way. And then I know what you'll do. You'll just disappear because the Spirit of the Lord will magic you somewhere and I'll be left carrying the can. I'm going to be killed. Obadiah, he's just scared. He's faithful, but it's a time of huge persecution. And he's hiding and he's scared. Well, he's the best of them, actually, Obadiah. And the worst of them is just the general population. The people, verse 21, limped between two different opinions. What if you notice that word comes twice in the passage? The people, they can't decide who is God. Elijah says, look, for goodness sake, if the Lord's God, follow the Lord. If Baal's God, follow Baal. But don't go, I'm not sure, which shall I do? It's a sort of pathetic dance you're doing. So I go this way or this way. You're sort of limping around. Later in the passage, who else limps around? The prophets limp around. It's like saying your Baal worship has done this to the population. It's turned you into limpers. You can't properly dance. You can't properly decide. You're sort of on the fence. Oh, I don't know. It could be this. It could be this. They're just not sure. And then verse 21, the people don't answer. This is really shocking. If the Lord is God, follow him. If Baal, follow him. And the people didn't answer. Why don't they answer? Because they don't know. Things have got so bad in the nation of Israel, God's nation, that they just don't even know who is God. So if we were doing a multiple choice test at the end of Grace Church Greenwich one day, who is the true and living God? Is it the God and Father of the Lord Jesus Christ, or is it the Hindu God Vishnu? And people said, could I just take the exam paper home and think about it for a minute, because I'm just not ready to make an answer quite yet. And that would be a disaster, wouldn't it, as a church, if you got to the stage you didn't even know. And then notice when Elijah suggests this contest, verse 24, how about we do a barbecue competition and we see which God can send fire from heaven? They say, that's a good idea. Why do they think it's a good idea? Because then we'll be able to find out who's God, because we're not sure right now. So yeah, some sort of miracle, that would really help us. Because we've forgotten everything about our history. And we've forgotten about the parting of the Red Sea and the conquest of the Promised Land and all of God's miraculous deliverance and his faithfulness to us. And we're just not sure. So yeah, that would be handy. Give us some proof, please. There's just wavering. There's doubts. They're doubt to the extent that they're just not even sure anymore who is the real God. But look after. By contrast, the people aren't in doubt anymore, are they? the fire comes down, whoosh, and they go, oh, we know now. Can we answer your question? The Lord's God. The Lord, he is God. Yahweh, he is God. Yahweh, he is God. And just as it's before, it's the true prophets of God who are persecuted and executed. Now the tables are turned and it's the fake prophets who are cut off and meet the death penalty for their evil. So the big change isn't that the barbecue's been lit. The big change is that the people come back to their God. Now we know. And then in the middle, I said the before, the after, and then the during. It's a bit like Sesame Street, these verses. You remember that, if anyone saw Sesame Street, I'm sure you did, the American educational TV program that was on Channel 4 in my childhood. And they said, yeah, this episode has been brought to you by the letter B and the number 12. Well, this episode is brought to you by the number 12. Did you notice? There's 12 of very significant things. Verse 31, Elijah took 12 stones to build the altar. And that's significant because it's 12 stones according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Jacob to whom the word of the Lord came. It's as if he says, okay, everyone, since I've got your attention, because everyone's on Mount Carmel for this huge barbecue contest, since I've got your attention, I'm just going to be a bit DIY on this altar, and watch me, will you? One for Judah, one for Benjamin, one for Dan, and he goes through all the stones. It's a sort of, do you remember? Do you remember your history? Your tribes of something, your tribes of a God of something, your tribes of the God of Israel, aren't you? There's 12 stones, and then I didn't notice this to start with, there's also 12 jars. Four jars of water, and then he says, do it again. They do a second time, then he says, do it again, they do it a third time. So 3 times 4 is 12. It's as if, like, as I say to you, this episode is brought to you by the number 12. It's got the symbolism of your history. Remember that you do know a God, and it's not Baal who got you here. There's the number 12, and then there's what I call the horizontal prayer. You know, prayers are meant to be to God, but occasionally we catch ourselves doing a prayer that's kind of for the benefit of the person next to us. And I think this is one of those. Verse 36, Elijah came near and says, O Lord, God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel. I mean, God knows who he is, and Elijah knows who he is, but it's a good bit of revision, isn't it, for everyone else who's listening? Let me remind you of your history, everyone, as I pray to this God. Answer me, verse 27, win the contest, that these people may know that you are God and that you have lit a barbecue. No, that's not the prize. That they may know that you are God and that you have turned their hearts back. And then God sends the fire and they exclaim, the Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God. Okay, well, that's the story. That's what's at stake. Convincing Christians that their God really is God. Application. Two points. The first one's easy. The second one's a bit surprising, but even more wonderful, I think. The first one, obvious one, don't waver. Don't do the stupid dance. That's the prophet of Baal dance. Is it this one? Is it this one? I'm not sure. As Christians, we often waver, don't we? We don't want to put all of our eggs in the Jesus basket. If you had to do multiple choice, I think most of us here who are Christians, we get it right. Is God, is Jesus God or is Vishnu God? Yeah, we'd all tick Jesus. But actually, in the decisions of life, we kind of want to hedge a bit. Mostly I'll go with Jesus, but I'll just in case, you know. And Elijah says, don't do that. He is the only God. The evidence of history is overwhelming. The idols can't even light a few twigs. So go with him completely. And it might be that we find that difficult. You know, if we had to decide, we'd go a bit quiet. And we wouldn't answer. And again, Elijah says, no, don't do that. That's like the prophets of Baal. That's like Baal. He has got nothing to say. Be confident. It might be here that there are Christians who aren't confident. You're not sure. And one of the wonderful things about this chapter is that God is gracious with doubters. And he gives very, very strong evidence. I mean, there's no doubt at the end of this chapter, is there? It's pretty obvious by the end. And we can see it in history. And you've not just got 1 Kings 18, you've got the whole of the rest of the Bible. You can add the Exodus from Egypt. You can add the resurrection of Jesus from the dead in front of witnesses. You can add the growth of the church globally at an extraordinary rate, the transformation of lives. And if you're not sure, look at the evidence, but then draw the conclusion. The Lord is the only God. That's the obvious one. Here's the puzzling one. Turn, would you, just to the book of James. And it is on page, James chapter 5, on page 1013. And this is where we're going to finish. Page 1013, James chapter 5 and verse 17. It's a famous verse. And in the NIV translation, which is the one that I learnt when I was younger Christian, it just says, Elijah was a man just like us. In the ESV, slightly more wordy, Elijah was a man with a nature like ours. And I thought, really? I mean, that's a surprise, to be honest. If I was reading the story of Elijah and the prophets of Baal, I can think of various people I might be like. In my worst moments, I might be one of the waverers. In my best moments, I might be like Obadiah, you know, faithful but scared, hiding. I wouldn't have thought, Elijah, yeah, that's me. slightly arrogant, wouldn't it, perhaps? In what ways is Elijah like us? Well, let's look at verse 17. Elijah was a man like us. He prayed fervently it wouldn't rain, and for 3 years, 6 months, it didn't rain. Then he prayed it would rain, and it rained. No, this isn't helping. Elijah now seems even less like me. I mean, when's the last time you prayed for a sunny day for your daughter's wedding and then there was a drought for 3.5 years? I mean, I don't think that's happened to any of us. When's the last time that your prayer ended a national famine somewhere and suddenly there was enough food? No. I mean, what does James mean? It seems that Elijah's a very unusual prophet and his prayers are very unusually powerful, that have national significance. And I never pray prayers like that. Well, take a text out of context and you're left with a con. And I'd never noticed that I'd just always taken James 5:17 as a prayer verse totally cut out of its context. It's the sort, you just have, what's your favourite verse on prayer? Oh, Elijah was a man just like us. He prayed. We should pray. Yeah, that's what the verse says, but what does it actually mean in its context? I'd never read the context about it, and then earlier this year, I just, for some reason, kept reading the next few verses, and I suddenly went, Eureka, it all makes sense. So watch with me, verse 16. Confess your sins to one another and pray for one another that you may be healed. The prayer of a righteous person has great power as it's working. Elijah was a man just like us. He prayed it wouldn't rain, and for 3 years and 6 months it didn't rain. Then he prayed again, and it did rain. My brothers, if anyone wanders from the truth and someone brings him back, let him know that whoever brings back a sinner from his wandering will save his soul from death and will cover a multitude of sins. What is the match between that person and Elijah? Well, the answer is Elijah was a bringing back of wanderers person. People who had trusted the God of Israel once, at least their parents had or their grandparents had, and they'd just sort of edged away into idolatry. And so Elijah prayed. Now, his particular prayer was quite unusual, and he got a 3.5 year drought out of it and then a fire from heaven to torch a barbecue. So in that respect, that's quite particular and not to be expected for us. But it's just a particular way of doing a general thing, which was, I'm really concerned, God, for this whole nation that's wandered away from me. I want to bring them back. Please bring them back. And James says, that's what we should do. If anyone wanders from the truth and someone brings him back, let him know that whoever brings back a sinner from his wandering will save his soul from death and cover a multitude of sins. Will you be an Elijah? I.e., will you be the person who prays to God, on behalf of the friend who's wandered off. You might think in terms of Grace Church, you know, overall as a church, we've grown since we started almost 3 years ago. But there's been some people have joined us, and some people have left us. Now, some people have left for good reasons. They've gone to other churches. They've moved to other countries. But some people have just wandered or drifted away. There's some faces that I sort of look out for, because I think, well, I haven't seen X for a while, and I look out now and I can't see X today either, or Y. Two people I was praying earlier today, oh, Lord, it would be great if X and Y were there today. They're not here. And I hope that you've got that kind of concern. If you're a regular, who's in my Grace group? And they're not here today, but they weren't here last week, and they weren't here the week before, and it wasn't because they were on holiday. I just haven't seen them for quite a long time now. I'm concerned. Or people who never quite made it into a small group because they always started on the fringes, and now none of us have actually even noticed that they're not here. Or maybe there's people that you know beyond this church. Yeah, people from your previous church or your youth group, and you just think, where are they now? And I want to encourage us to do an Elijah, to pray, Lord, please would you call this people's hearts back to you. Please will you do what it takes to turn their hearts back. And it turns out God is prepared to answer prayers like that in extraordinary ways. Elijah was a man just like us. We're going to take a pause, and then we're going to be led in prayer together.